Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right.
All right, Alabama syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams sitting here in the Right Side studios. Local, state, national stuff, all the issues, we cover them. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Hey, listen, I've got a friend, Jim Hawkins, is coming on now. Jim currently serves as a senior principal for emergency management for Dynamis, which is based in Huntsville. He's got 30 years of leadership experience. The majority of that is as a green suiter in uniform with the Alabama National Guard. Jim was a full-timer. Last military assignment he had was the director of military support in the J357 for the National Guard headquarters in Montgomery. He coordinated, literally all of the civil support operations. You had a disaster relief issue, you had a hurricane, you had whatever. Jim was in the thick of it, usually running the jock. Extensive experience, a senior member of our Alabama National Guard, now retired, though, but a good friend, Jim Hawkins. Colonel Jim Hawkins, how you doing, bud?
I'm well, Phil. Thanks for that introduction. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Well, listen, when I texted you back and forth, I was talking about the fact that I'm really concerned about the fact that our Alabama National Guard, which is a very robust and highly operational and active National Guard, is looking at almost an 18% potential loss because of the vaccine mandates. I wanted to get your perspective. What do you think that's going to do to readiness? What are you hearing from, folks that are still there? I'd love to hear it.
Well, I hadn't heard the 18% number until you and I started talking about it, but that's a pretty big, blow. So the Army Guard in Alabama, and you're right, it's a big guard. We're the fifth largest in the country, or we were when I retired. The Army Guard's at about 95% strength. The Air Guard's also about 95% strength. So if we take an 18% dip, you're looking at about 77% of assigned strength. The Army has some metrics that you can use to look at. You remember the old FM-101-5-1? Army terms and graphics, and a unit that was at 70 to 84% strength was considered combat capable with deficiencies. So it's a reduced level. It's an amber unit. You got to be 85% or higher to be considered combat capable. So we'll definitely take a dip. If you look at the Heritage Foundation, which does an index of U.S. military strength, they consider a unit at 75 to 82% marginal. So, that's definitely going to reduce the capability. It's going to readiness is going to take a dip, and the ability to execute the missions will take a dip.
Yeah, and totally. And listen, so your time and where I first met you was when you were working the domestic operations group there in Montgomery and basically spearheading any efforts related to disaster relief. So the Guard has it's an operational guard these days, highly deployable, highly capable, but yet always having the homeland defense and homeland support missions related to disaster relief and everything else that you helped coordinate. What are you looking at? If you were still there right now, what would your thoughts be in terms of being able to do disaster response?
Well, I'd be concerned because, the Guard has that unique dual mission. It has that federal mission to support ongoing federal operations around the world, but it also has that state mission to take care of things at home if there's a disaster or some kind of emergency. The federal mission takes priority. If there's a dip in Alabama Guard strength, other states can assist the U.S. Army with mobilizations to accomplish that mission. But if we take a dip here at home, where does that leave us? Because some percentage of the force is always either employed in a federal mission or preparing for a federal mission. So you never have 100% of the Guard available for a domestic response. In fact, we usually, when we activated a unit, you usually only got about 70% of that unit to deploy because of people are off at school or whatnot. So if you take another 18% off of that, you start to get into an area of concern about having the capability to do everything you need to do.
Well, yeah, and I tell you what gets me too, Jim, as I look at this, I heard that Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin had said in a congressional briefing, I think it was House Armed Services he was talking to, and he told them he did not see the vaccine mandates having a total impact or a big impact on overall readiness. because, and he was quoting it just from a purely one over the world, here's the big numbers type level. But what happens, though, when you get into a unit like, for instance, the 20th Special Forces Group here in Alabama, or the Air Refueling Wing out of Birmingham, how long does it take to get somebody fully capable and trained to be a KC-135 air refueling boom operator to refuel F-16s in flight? I mean, what does it take? And if you lose too many of those, it's not just that your numbers are down, now your mission capability is completely down.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, it takes quite a while to train just a basic soldier airman, but when you get into these specialists or these folks in the mid or upper ranks, it takes years. And you're talking millions of dollars expended to train those people. And yeah. They're not easy to replace. There's nothing that takes the place of that time that you'll have to get back. Yeah, you know, back in December, the Army said for just the Army that they had 98% of their people vaccinated on active duty. But in the reserve force, the total force, it was only 83%. So I think a lot of times senior leaders like the secretary tend to focus on the active component and aren't really paying attention to the unique needs and requirements of the reserve component, particularly the National Guard and its mission to its state.
Well, yeah, and here we are coming into hurricane season. Let me ask you this. I don't know if you've got any contacts at NGB, National Guard Bureau, now in D.C. I'm sure you still got friends that work up there, but have you heard anything? I mean, is NGB going to bat on this thing, or are they sitting back going, well, you know, should have got the shot? I mean, what's being said at the God's eye view here?
Well, I don't know anything official, but typically the Bureau follows the lead of the Pentagon. I mean, they don't have a lot of latitude in that. But what you are seeing is certain states that are taking a stand. You know, the Adjutant General of Oklahoma, for instance, pushed back pretty hard with the support of his governor. But ultimately, because the National Guard is federally funded for the vast majority of its funding, the power of the purse will win out, and they'll be able to strong arm people into either getting the vaccine or being discharged. One bright note is the NDAA that the president signed back in December.
Yeah,
specifically stated that if anybody was discharged for refusing to take the vaccine, it had to be either honorable or generally under honorable conditions. So at least they're not stripping people's benefits, but it's still a tragedy to drive so many dedicated soldiers, airmen, and, you know, on the active component, sailors and Marines out of the service because they don't want to take a shot. You know, we all lived through anthrax. We all know people that got Julian Bear and other issues from the anthrax shot. And here we go again.
Yeah, and it just feels needless. And you and I both know, and I'll say this readily, that I'm not anti-vax, but I'm definitely anti-mandate. But you and I both know that when you put on that green suit, that sometimes you not in some cases, you lose some of your normal privileges, and you may have to get a shot you didn't want. But then again, this one feels very heavy-handed. It feels very arbitrary in a sense. And majority of the vaccine mandates have been shot down in the other capacities in which it's being implemented. The last remaining stand of the vaccine mandate is the military, it appears.
Yes, it's unfortunate. And you know, the pandemic, we've learned so much since the early days when when the vaccines and then the mandate came out. I really think it's time to sort of reexamine that. I mean, if you're a 20-year-old physically fit soldier, you know, the risk of COVID to you is just not that high. So why run those soldiers off because they don't want to get a shot?
Well, and then here's the other piece, too, that I've not heard discussed a whole lot, but it's going to have to be. How many of these soldiers are going to wind up being, you know, put in a position of being discharged, have that on their record for that matter, and at the same time, whether it's honorable or not, they still, but then at the same time, they may have a commitment that they started a GI Bill, but they have to serve a certain amount. They may have benefits that they relied upon. Like some of them, you can take advantage of TRICARE when you're a guardsman. If that was your family's insurance, then what? I just look at some of this and think, man, there's a pile on coming for some of these troops.
No, that's absolutely right. They'll be a price beyond losing the privilege to serve. They're going to lose a lot of entitlements over this. And I find it particularly disturbing too that the DOD made a big deal about the ability to request exemptions and things like that. And they've approved, you know, very, very few, virtually none. So that's all sort of smoke and mirrors.
You hearing anything out of Montgomery? What's Joint Force Headquarters saying? They got any fears or concerns that you know of?
Not that I am aware of. I'm just not down there as much. And, you know, it's been, well, I just hit my 3-year anniversary of retiring back in May. And so, you know, I certainly keep my ear to the ground, but COVID's just something that people won't talk about much because it's such a hot button. You know, you don't want to be that person. So the emotions that surround that discussion, whether it's masks or the vaccine or whatever, the people that are pro that are very pro, and the people that are against it are very against it. And, you know, I fall in the middle on the vaccine. I got it. But, you know, frankly, I wouldn't have got it if it hadn't been a requirement for me, probably.
Yeah, I get it. Well, I think what's going to wind up happening, Jim, is there going to be a bunch of folks who got in for all the right reasons, who got highly trained, and now they're going to be highly gone. And I would bet that some of those are going to become very vocal once they're out of uniform and have something they can say and they're allowed to say. I think we're going to start hearing from some people pretty soon if that happens.
Well, I think you're right. I think you're right. And what my hope is that you know, we have an administration change, the mandate goes away, and some of those terrific service members are allowed to reenlist. They're not given reenlistment codes that bar them from getting back in and getting back to the business of defending the country or taking care of their state in an emergency.
Yeah, well, I agree, and I'm not going to be a bit surprised if we don't see, even after the 2022 midterms, without seeing a total change in the administration, if we could see Congress and the Senate change. I'm pretty sure there's going to be some Republican leadership that says, hey, by the way, if you were kicked out, we want you back, and I'm not going to be a bit surprised to see that happen. So, anyway,
I agree with you.
Hey, Jim Hawkins, I appreciate you, man. As always, thanks for your many, many years of service, 3 decades plus, and for the time we spent together in Montgomery. But stay tuned, and we'll have you back on again sometime soon.
I'd appreciate that. I always enjoyed being here, and thanks for your service, my brother.
All right, man. Take care. All right, folks, that's right, Colonel Jim Hawkins, senior member of Alabama's National Guard. Had basically, he was the point man for everything domestic relief related. Highly skilled dude, and one of the best I've ever seen at running a staff. Just does a great job. Anyway, now in the civilian sector and able to talk. All right, listen, we're going to go ahead and move to the break. We'll come back. We'll finish up this segment, and then 3:30, you got to stay tuned. We're looking at the Grand Council. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama, solid conservative and just plain right. So, yeah, that was cool to have my friend Jim Hawkins on. It's even cooler to be able to talk about something that I love and am very passionate about. But let me just wrap this up, all right? In case you – I mean, I'm looking at an article right now from Notre Dame University's it's called the NDU Press. The operational National Guard, it says, a unique and capable component of the Joint Force. I just want to make sure that you hear me say, it's not because I've been in the Guard or I have friends in the Guard or whatever else. It's because they are truly considered part of the operational force. It talks about the fact in this particular article that globalization, the rise of near-peer powers and regional actors and sociological changes and other things that are happening around the world create a lot of dynamics that are very complex. And in the middle of all that, we have to be aware that we have a lot of what's called major power competition. Now, this article I'm reading right now was written in 2017, 5 years ago. It was already talking 5 years ago about the fact that we're looking at states like Russia and China that are beginning to test their longstanding international borders and customs. I'm just telling you, 5 years ago, we were aware that things were ramping up. Well, so here's the thing. As we move into the future, and this article points that out, the U.S. military is going to have to remain a vital and key instrument in maintaining our security and stability around the globe and here in the homeland. It's going to require a military that can rapidly surge. It's going to require a military that can protect our homeland from emerging threats. It's going to require a military that can work hand in hand with our allies, our partners, with other governments, And maintaining an operational National Guard, which is approximately 20% of our overall fighting force, is essential. So here we are, sitting 5 years ago, knowing exactly that. Knowing full well that the warfighting effort since 9/11 could not have been sustained without an operational National Guard. And it says in here, too, that the National Guard has evolved into an operational warfighting organization designed with a balance of combat and enabling units that largely mirrors the active component. It's provided the joint force of the United States a capability to rapidly expand its power overseas. And in the homeland, of course, they have the mission of making sure the homeland defense is secure, because you can't just, you know, bring the 101st Airborne to Alabama when things go badly. You have to activate the National Guard under state law. It's actually the U.S. code under Title 32 is where you control the National Guard. The U.S. code under Title 10 is where you control the active duty. When a National Guardsman goes on active duty for a war, he or she is converted to a Title 10 status. Title 32 gives the governor the right to direct their own National Guard to fill in the blanks when something bad happens. Riots. I got called up for riot duty once. I've been called up for hurricane duty. And when Hurricane Katrina happened, it was the National Guard that showed up on the scene and brought all kinds of relief effort that couldn't be brought to bear by civilian authorities. Thousands of National Guard members are currently serving around the globe, even right now. For a period of time, and I think they still do, the 20th Special Forces Group based out of Alabama, a bunch of Green Berets in the reserve component here in Alabama, they had their own area of operations in the world. They were so robust that they were given their own area of operations. That's never been done before. The 167th Theater Sustainment Command, which is over in Anniston, it's never been done before that a reserve component, National Guard in this case, a reserve component Theater Sustainment Command has been given operational capacity to man the logistics of the NORTHCOM, that's the United States defense. If something goes bad, like a 9/11 again, your Alabama National Guard has the headquarters that is in charge of being the logistics hub for all of it. And as a result, that unit is what they call a multi-compo. It's one of the only units in the entire National Guard inventory, 50 states across, that's considered a multi-compo, meaning they have actual active duty folks that are assigned to this National Guard unit full-time. They're multi-composition. Well, listen, this can't go down overnight. It's one thing to see recruiting dip. It's another thing to see operational capacity dip. It's another thing to see robust deployments put a strain on the ranks. I get all that. That's kind of what they signed up for. It's another thing altogether to have an administration that blindly moves forward with a mandate that is not considered viable anymore. In the vast majority of the areas they tried to do the mandate, it failed. It was struck down by the courts. And I get it. I know. I had to push through with the anthrax thing, and somehow or another, I avoided getting some of the anthrax shots. And then the Army said, you know what, this is a really bad idea, and it went away. Are they ever going to have the wherewithal to say, you know what, Dr. Fauci just said yesterday, apparently being vaccinated doesn't prevent you from getting it or from spreading it. So why are we doing this? Why are we taking young troopers who signed up for all the right reasons, looking for a means to support and defend their nation and their state, and just telling them overnight, you don't get paid anymore? Thanks for your service, Sergeant. Thanks for your service, Captain. Thanks for your service, Major. I have a friend who's a major that recently got out. He's a paratrooper. He had served admirably for 16 years. He was close to vesting in his retirement. He decided that he was going to get out because he knew that if he didn't get out, they would do something on his record that might prevent his ability to come back in later. He's hedging. He's hedging on the belief that what's going to wind up happening is this is not going to fly well, and after the 2022 midterms, we're going to see a sea change. And somebody's going to wake up, and they're going to say, what are we doing to the force? All right, listen, folks, that's it. We're going to move forward on this break. Coming back up, I may have a bit of a gaffe on the Grand Council, but I at least got Jeff Poore joining me. I know that. Dale Jackson, I hope so too. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Coming right back. Y'all stay tuned.